What happens when the person who saved you once reappears just when you need saving again? Atlas Corrigan stands in his successful Boston restaurant, staring at his phone like a teenager waiting for a text. The professional chef who commands a bustling kitchen can't focus on anything except the fact that Lily Bloom, his first love, the girl who showed him kindness when he was homeless at 16, is finally free. Free from her marriage to Ryle, free from the cycle of abuse that nearly destroyed her, and potentially free to love him again. Meanwhile, across town, Lily sits in her parked car overlooking the harbor, her phone heavy in her hand, terrified that reaching out to Atlas might shatter the fragile peace she's built for her daughter Emmy. Their story isn't about fairy tale romance. It's about whether two people scarred by trauma can find their way back to each other without repeating the patterns that broke them in the first place. Leaving an abusive marriage doesn't end the abuse, it transforms it. Ryle uses his emergency key to enter Lily's apartment unannounced, framing violations as co-parenting necessity. One evening, she finds him waiting with her favorite Thai food, pad thai with extra peanuts. The gesture seems thoughtful until you recognize the manipulation, a calculated reminder of good times strategically deployed to maintain control. When Lily requests her key back, Ryle follows a chilling pattern: dismissal, defensive anger, then threats to modify custody. Children become bargaining chips. Visitation schedules become weapons. After he leaves, Lily retrieves a worn notebook from her bedside drawer, reading her meticulously documented list. The slap, the push down the stairs, the bite marks, the night he forced himself on her. This documentation serves as legal evidence and emotional anchor, a paper shield against gaslighting. Every interaction requires calculating risks, measuring whether standing firm is worth potential repercussions. For survivors co-parenting with abusers, freedom is never complete, and vigilance becomes permanent. Atlas's restaurant is vandalized twice. First spray-painted asshole with stolen croutons, then fuck up Atlas before the culprit falls asleep on the back steps. Security footage captures a hooded figure, but Atlas is too distracted by Lily to investigate. When he brings lunch to her flower shop, their chemistry ignites. "I get tongue-tied around you," Lily admits as he touches her finger. The moment shatters when Alyssa warns that Ryle is arriving. Lily panics and hides Atlas in her supply closet, revealing how Ryle's jealousy still controls her. After Ryle leaves, Atlas pulls Lily into the closet and asks to call her. When she worries about her complicated life, he confidently offers to help uncomplicate it, suggesting he could be the second best thing to happen to her after Emerson. Their relationship deepens during a vulnerable FaceTime call where Atlas admits he lied about having an uncle in Boston. He actually moved there alone for homeless shelters. An accidentally intimate moment occurs when Lily exposes herself while breastfeeding. Atlas's respectful reaction distinguishes him from Ryle, showing his capacity to love Lily exactly as she is. The restaurant vandal is revealed to be Josh, an 11-year-old brother Atlas never knew existed. His mother, Sutton, appears only to avoid truancy charges after abandoning Josh for days without basic necessities. Despite Josh's initial hostility and property damage, Atlas recognizes his own desperate cry for help and pursues emergency guardianship. He transforms his apartment with Josh's first proper bedroom, navigating midnight ER visits for asthma attacks and school adjustments. Lily's teaching experience proves instrumental in helping Josh settle. When assigned a family tree project, Josh creates an alternative, showing just two branches, his and Atlas's, declaring it a whole new family tree that starts with us. This becomes the novel's central metaphor. Families can be rebuilt through conscious choice, breaking generational patterns to create something entirely new. As Lily and Atlas grow closer, Ryle's behavior escalates. After discovering their relationship, he attacks Atlas at his restaurant. Atlas refuses to retaliate, calmly noting that no argument between them would end with Lily hospitalized, a stark contrast to Ryle's violence. At Emmy's birthday party, Lily sets firm boundaries. Ryle must complete anger management and can only see Emmy under supervision at Elisa and Marshall's home. When Ryle resists, Elisa supports Lily, telling her brother, "I love you, but I'll help her." This moment, family protecting a victim rather than enabling an abuser, represents a crucial turning point. The novel portrays Ryle as a deeply damaged person whose trauma has made him dangerous, acknowledging that abusers are flawed humans whose pain doesn't excuse their behavior. As Lily reflects, the hardest part about ending an abusive relationship is that while the bad moments continue, it's the good moments you put an end to. She stands firm, recognizing that protecting Emmy means breaking the cycle she witnessed in her childhood. Atlas and Lily's journey explores healing after profound betrayals, his mother's abandonment, her escape from Ryle's violence. When Atlas discovers the heart tattoo on Lily's shoulder, his desire shifts to distress, realizing Ryle had violently bitten her there. His guilt at failing to protect her meets Lily's powerful revelation. Whenever she doubted leaving, she imagined how differently Atlas would have handled those situations. "You're a big part of the reason I got through it, even though you weren't there," she tells him, showing how the memory of healthy love sustains hope through darkness. When they finally make love, Lily worries about her postpartum body and leaking breast milk. Atlas's response, "Everything about tonight was perfect. Don't you dare apologize," contrasts sharply with Ryle's controlling behavior. Their connection feels chaotically beautiful and absolutely right, love built on acceptance rather than possession. Through their relationship, both discover that real love creates space for imperfection and honors each person's journey toward wholeness. 3 years later, Atlas prepares wedding vows, acknowledging love's fragility while committing anyway. "Humans are disappointing, and love often fails," he writes, finding optimism in marriage's 50% success rate, odds that would have thrilled my younger self. He promises to cherish every moment, whether they spend decades together or part tomorrow. This realistic yet hopeful perspective captures the novel's approach to love after trauma. No guarantees, only courage to try again. Their blended family faces challenges. Ryle struggles accepting his daughter's relationship with Atlas, and Sutton rarely attends family dinners. Yet they focus on what's working in our lives rather than what isn't. When Marshall brings Emerson to Atlas while Ryle waits in the car, Lily sees progress, the men prioritizing Emerson over personal feelings. Atlas's playful postscript, "It is my wish for you to be my fish," referencing Finding Nemo, symbolizes their journey from trauma to joy, survival to playfulness. The story demonstrates that meaningful love is built through boundaries, vulnerability, and daily choice. Breaking abuse cycles require awareness, support systems, and courage to choose differently. One boundary, one choice, one act of love at a time.